the gospel will overcome. In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
All right. Welcome back in The Dean's List. Mary, we are continuing our conversation from yesterday. We kind of got bogged down. That's typical. That's okay. We talk every day. We talk a lot. We're just going to keep going.
All right.
Talk about some solutions.
Okay.
Got to set it up again, though.
All right.
We're talking about this deal out in Iowa. Basically, Iowa churches are required to base bathroom use upon gender identity, not biological sex, and they could be barred from making statements that make a transgender person feel unwelcome unless services are closed to the public. And this from the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. So we kind of talked about the whole Iowa deal, the transgender deal. We talked a little bit about discrimination versus liberty, those kinds of things. And, you know, there were just some loose ends. We never got to what Christians ought to do in light of this. And so we're going to talk about that, but just some loose ends on the way.
All right. Go ahead. Tie one up.
I'm going to try. Yesterday I mentioned Patrick Henry and Thomas Paine. Now, nobody cares about that, but...
except for...
I think, you know, I was just on a...
history buffs out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to be informed about history. And I said something about, give me freedom or give me death. And I said, hey, somebody said that. Oh, Thomas Paine. No, wait a minute. Patrick Henry.
Yes, it was Patrick.
And it was Patrick Henry, of course. Patrick Henry, one of our founding fathers, Christian, give me liberty or give me death, that kind of thing. And then I said Thomas Paine was a wicked philosopher, and that's true. He was. Now, he was one of our founding fathers as well, and he advocated for freedom, but he came from a very different perspective than Thomas, than Patrick Henry.
Patrick,
I'm getting my words confused again, but Thomas Paine came from a very different perspective than Patrick Henry. I mean, he was influenced by Enlightenment ideas and deism. He's basically a deist and all that, and he wrote The Age of Reason, and everybody knows that. So, I mean, just wanted to, you know, clarify, make sure nobody got the wrong impression. Thomas Paine believed in freedom, but when I say he was a wicked philosopher, obviously he was not a Christian, and not only was he not a Christian, but he fought against Christianity. He sought to dismantle organized religion and criticized in particular the doctrines of the Lord Jesus Christ. Anyway, don't want to go down that road too long. Just want to make sure that everybody knows who Thomas Paine and Patrick Henry are. And Patrick Henry, again, said, give me liberty or give me death. And that's something that I was saying yesterday. I don't even remember why I was saying it. But I guess I'm in it.
Churches to have freedom. You know, anybody
yeah.
to have freedom, yes.
Yeah, got to have freedom.
Now we're tying ourselves up in a knot with all this.
Oh, yeah.
PC stuff.
Well, yeah, and one of the things we were saying is that, you know, liberty is not... Liberty is what allows a civil society to remain civil. It allows a civil society to remain together. And the more you do away with liberty, well, the more splintered a society is going to be, and the more problems, the more chaos, and it's just going to collapse until you have a, I don't know, sort of a reboot, as it were, but, you know, the reboot may or may not be good. And what is driving our culture now, a lot of things, and people would say, well, it's individual liberty that's driving our culture now. Well, there's a very real sense in which that's true. I'm not talking about, you know, throwing off moral restraint. I'm not talking about when I say liberty is what holds a society together. I'm a Christian. People need the Lord Jesus Christ in order to be saved. But you can't force religion. You can't force, you know, your values on people. You got to let people be who they are. But they can't violate each other's rights. We talked about that before. We're not going to go down that road very long. The point is, the role of government is to protect my rights. And if it's to protect my rights, it's to protect the rights of others. And so we can't force each other, you know, to believe what, you know, I can't force you to believe what I believe. Neither can you force me to believe what you believe. That's what's going on now. They're trying to force me to believe what they believe. And that's a problem.
Yes.
And so a lot of Christians are confused about civil society and government and its role. And they say, well, you know, you got to legislate morality. No, wait a minute. No. All issues are moral. Okay, all issues are moral, but not all issues are civil. Well, what issues are civil? Well, those issues that have to do with rights. I have a right to life. I have a right to liberty. I have a right to pursue whatever I want to pursue, but I don't have a right to violate someone else's rights because they too have a right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. So I can't kill. I can't steal. I can't outlaw someone's religion.
Or put a fence on your neighbor's yard.
Yeah, I can put one on my yard, but not on my neighbor's yard.
But if it's against your covenants, then, you know, they might have to, they have the right to do something about it.
Well, the neighbor, a neighborhood, a homeowners yes. association has a right to band together and make covenants for a particular neighborhood. And if you don't like those covenants, you can live somewhere else.
Yes.
But that's not the government saying, you know, you must buy a red house, for example. You know, the government telling me what I can and can't do. The government telling me I can't install a shower, an extra shower in my house without a permit or a license from the government. That's just not liberty. Anyway.
Yeah. You've done that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not what we're talking okay. about. But I'm just simply saying we got to get this right. But we have a society that is splintering. We have a society, as you said a moment ago, PC, political correctness. It's really identity politics rooted in philosophical multiculturalism. And essentially, it's dividing us, as I said a moment ago. It's killing us. It's destroying us. And people are not so much concerned with liberty. No, they're concerned with their personal freedoms per se. But they're not really. They're not. They want to do what they want to do. But that's the thing. They don't care about anyone else's liberty. They want personal freedom to engage in any form of immorality they want, but they don't care about a civil society. In fact, they're not after liberty or freedom. They're after power. Some realize it, some don't. But that's the problem. When you eschew liberty and when you put things like discrimination at the top of the heap, in other words, yes, there is despicable discrimination. But so what? As long as you don't violate someone's rights, That's what it means to have a free society. It's a free country, isn't it?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
I'm joking, but
it ain't America no more, okay?
All right.
Well, no, this is the point, though.
Okay.
This is the point. People want to say, well, okay, here in this Iowa churches case, churches, religious freedom is no longer an ideal that we hold as Americans. We're going to do away with the First Amendment. Because what we're going to say to you churches is that when a transgender person comes into your church building, you're going to have all your restrooms have to be transgender neutral, you know, gender neutral, transgender accommodating. You can't say anything that makes a transgender uncomfortable. Even if you believe transgenderism against your religion is no longer protected in America. You got to toe the religious line that we tell you to toe, which says that transgendered folk are normal, that their lifestyle is just as good as your lifestyle, and you can't say anything against it. Otherwise, we're going to put the hammer on you. So, you know, what is that? Well, that's putting, you know, what they're saying is you can't discriminate in that way. You can't say they're wrong. You can't, you know, not accommodate them in terms of the restrooms. That's putting discrimination above liberty. But if we put liberty above everything else, yeah, there might be some people here and there that get their feelings hurt because they're discriminated against, but nobody's rights would be violated. Again, I use this illustration. If I walk into a bakery, let's just say the same-sex couple walks into a bakery and the baker won't sell them a cake, none of their rights have been violated. They might get their feelings hurt, but they don't have a right to that particular baker's cake. They have a right to make an offer to purchase, but if the baker refuses to sell, that's that.
Or it should be, yes.
And that, well, it should be, just like real estate, if you're selling your own home. And so they can go down the street and seek to purchase from someone else. And guess what? Someone else will be happy to sell them that cake. So the point being, see, but what happens is when you force that baker to sell the cake, if he doesn't want to, not only are you discriminating against him, but you're violating his rights. And see, now, again, you're destroying liberty. See, someone has been violated in that case. This is the point that I want to shout from the rooftops, and I think Christians need to get clear, and our society needs to get clear. And it's not just to win the argument. We're going to root it back in the gospel here in just a moment. But if I don't sell you something, your rights have not been violated. But if I am forced to sell you something, then I have been violated. Violence has been done to me. And that's what we oppose as Christians. We oppose violence of any form. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't penalties for, you know, criminal acts like murder. That's a different issue. We'll talk about that another time. But you understand what I'm trying to say. So you mentioned this case sometime back. I don't even know how it came up. We were talking about the whole transgender thing and, you know, the right to do with your property what you want to do. And that's just going away. So we had this guy, I think it was up in New York, this case that you mentioned yesterday. I said we'd get back to it. And we're going to come to a point here, I promise. But we're tying up those loose ends. So this guy owns a bar and he's happy for anybody to come in, LGBT. You know, all of them, homosexuals, transgenders, there's a sense in which, I think maybe he was catering to them. I don't know. But it was open to everyone, and it was very popular with everyone, and everyone was very happy with it. And it turns out it was so good that a group of transgendered men, I guess, that's what it was, they started making it their particular hangout on like a Friday night. And so more and more started coming in, and guess what happened? Well, all of a lot of the young girls, and again, I'm not advocating having a bar in this lifestyle. I'm just making a point. But all of the girls got they used to want to hang out with all these transgendered men. They just didn't like it, and so they left. And when all the straight girls left, guess who else left?
All the straight guys.
And so then all he got left is transgender folk. Now, the guy, the owner of the bar didn't even care about that if you had enough transgender folk to maintain his business, but he didn't. And so what happened is you had about 50 of these folks, I think, but you had, you know, hundreds of other people that didn't come by. And so his business was getting killed. And he's got to earn a living. He's got to put food on the table just like me and you. And so he, in a friendly way, he went up to the transgender folks. He said, "Hey, I love you guys being here. Want you to come and happy to serve you. But can you not, you know, can you not make it your Friday night hangout? I got no business now. And frankly, if this continues, you know, if it's your hangout, this is where you come exclusively and everybody comes all at the same time. Well, then, you know, I'm not going to be able to stay open." Well, guess what happened? They were, quote unquote, offended, and they were violated. See, they weren't violated, but they felt violated, and they chose to become victims like everybody else in this culture. And so they sued him, and long story short, of course, I can't remember all the details because this was some time back, but essentially, the government put this guy out of business. I think they sided with the transgender, said he couldn't ask them, you know, what he did. He wasn't banning them. He wasn't being ugly. He wasn't discriminating. He just asked them a favor. And the government said that was wrong. I think they fined him like $400,000. And this is what I'm talking about. This is where our culture is going. Does a man not have the liberty to just say, "Hey, guys, can you help me out here so that you can keep coming here?" Well, not anymore. Because we got a new religion and it's being forced on the rest of us. And the reality is, back in, I don't know, just like, well, we're still in July, aren't we? So just like a week ago, I was going to say back in June, but it's July. July 5th is the date I have here. In a National Review post, David French, a former ADF attorney, noted that it was not long ago that when Christian concern that the government would soon be regulating the affairs of churches was dismissed as absurd paranoia. See, it wasn't that long ago. The government's going to try to infuse itself in our church. Oh, you're just paranoid. That ain't going to happen. Guess what? It's taking shape. That's what's happening here. We're talking about churches now in Iowa, according to the Civil Rights Commission of Iowa. They got to have the unisex bathrooms. They got to have the, they can't have bathrooms based on sex. It's got to be open to anyone and everyone. One bathroom. And you can't say anything to make the transgender folk uncomfortable. I was reading something else along these lines. Bethany Cosma. She's a former White House staffer. She's a homeschool mom. She's got a piece that's entitled, I'm a Mom and Here's What I'm Doing to, I forget the exact words, but I'm a homeschool mom. Here's what I'm doing to help overturn or help, you know, push back Obama's transgender agenda. And she describes this agenda. She says, to put it simply, a boy claiming gender confusion, and we all know about this, but just again, we're coming to a point. A boy claiming gender confusion must now be allowed in the same shower, bathroom, or locker room with my daughter under the president's transgender policies. When I learned that predators could abuse these new policies to hurt children in school lockers, shelters, pool showers, or other vulnerable public places like remote bathrooms and national parks, I realized I had to do something. She goes on. I instinctively knew that I needed to speak up to protect those who cannot speak for themselves, our children. As I learned more about the issue, I realized that I also needed to speak up for victims of sexual assault. Now listen to this. This is something that not a lot of folk are talking about. Mm-hmm. I realized I needed to speak up for victims of sexual assault who would be re-traumatized. See, you got the... What is it? The warnings in schools now? You got to give the trauma warning. What's it called?
Trigger.
The trigger warnings in the universities. We're getting ready to talk.
Someone who's been abused can't even go in the bathroom.
Well, that's it. We're getting ready to talk about sensitive subject matter, and you might be traumatized, so you get a pass for the day, or maybe I can't talk about it, or you know, you feel re-victimized. The college professors are scared to say anything for fear of being fired, and yet. I mean, Bethany Cosma's pointing out this glaring contradiction. It's not even a minor thing. This is major. And she says, think about victims of sexual assault who would be re-traumatized by having biological males in dress in front of them. Well, there's a trigger warning. But see, they don't have to give the trigger warning. They don't have to say, hey, I'm about to get naked, lady. They can do what they want. Women who may now feel themselves powerless to do anything about it due to legal concerns and fear of being labeled bigots. So you got these women who've been assaulted, and now by law they're afraid to say something, or maybe they're going to be accused of being a bigot. So she engages in this effort to try to push back Obama's edict, and she says, what I found dismayed me. People were being bullied into silence by the threats from the federal government and LGBT activists. And I was saddened by how few people in the general public really knew what was really going on today in our nation's schools. And so through conversations with friends and family, she founded this campaign called United We Stand. And they're basically trying to educate parents. It's exploded into a national campaign to tell the White House and President Obama, no. Just say no. Obama, that's what they're saying. The message is that the radical agenda of subjective gender fluidity and unrestricted shower and bathroom access actually endangers all. And because the national edict was approved by the White House, she says it can be stopped by the White House. So here's what she's doing. This is today. Today at noon. Now, we're recording this show earlier than everybody's going to hear it, actually. But today at noon, or really 1 o'clock, I guess. I don't know. 12, yeah, Eastern Standard Time, 1 o'clock. She and legions of others are going to inundate the White House comment line to respectfully say no to Obama's bathroom policies. And she says they're going to do so in numbers that will certainly get the White House's attention. Now, that's not the only thing they're doing, but that's a start. And I think that Christians, just like this woman, I don't know if this woman's a Christian or not. I have no idea. But I think Christians, you know, need to wake up, need to speak, need to talk, need to do things like this. And it really brings me, Mary, to what we really wanted to get to yesterday. And that is, you know, on the one hand, how should Christians respond to the government now trying to reach in? Because it's going to be more and more. We're not being paranoid. We're looking at the writing on the wall. Anybody who says we're being paranoid, they're either being disingenuous or they're being stupid, one or the other. Mm-hmm. So what do we do as Christians? Well, I mean, you know, on the one hand, we want to reach people for Christ. That's our goal. It's not to be adversaries with everyone. And so we meet transgender folk. We want to be nice. We want to be kind. We want to be loving. We want to talk to them about what's going on in their life. Now, we do want to tell them the truth. And why do we want to tell them the truth? So they can be saved. So they can be delivered from a lifestyle that's contrary to what God says is right. They need Christ. They need grace. They need mercy. They need forgiveness. They need transformation. They need to be brought in line with the God's natural order of creation, male and female. And so our churches want to be welcoming in a very real sense. Why? Because churches, and when we gather together, we gather to worship the Lord. We gather to fellowship with one another. But you know, we're having everyday conversations with people, hopefully. I know that I do. I know that you do. But at the same time, sometimes people do come into our churches, and we want to be welcoming. We want to be inviting because a church worship is a place where sinners ought to be able to come for salvation. But that doesn't mean we compromise the truth. That doesn't mean we don't speak the truth. We do speak the truth. We do it in love, but we speak the truth. And everybody knows this. But I'm coming to a point. And, take it a step further, there's some government regulations we submit to. As long as we're not violating biblical principles. Let's say the government says, church, you got to provide a handicap ramp. Well, you know, on the one hand, I want to accommodate folk with disabilities as much as I can. At the same time, it might be that we can't afford it at this particular point in time. Maybe we have alternative means to help folk with disabilities. But if the government says do it, I'm going to do it. I have no problem submitting to that. So there's some government regulations we submit to, is my point. But we cannot submit to this regulation. When the government says you got to change your bathrooms, you can't have bathrooms for men and women, got to be for everybody all at the same time. We can't submit to that. Now, you say, or someone else say, well, now, why can't you? Because in other contexts, you know, what if you just have one bathroom? I mean, there are probably churches that already do that long before this issue came up. Just because of money or space or whatever, you go into lots of offices and men and women share the same bathroom. It's no big deal.
It's like in a house.
You like have, in a house,
you have
yeah.
A separate facility. You have one stall and one room.
Yeah. And there again, you know, you have one room with a lock on the door where people can't come in and out. You know, practically speaking, I'm okay with that. But, we're talking about you go in the bathroom, say there are four stalls there, and they're going to let men and women come in at the same time. Well, no, you can't do that, number one. That's immoral. Churches can't be immoral. But number two, the reason I say you can't even do away with that and just, you know, lots of churches would have to change lots of facilities. But the reason I say you can't even go to the one, you know, if you've already got it, fine. But I'm just talking about churches accommodating because of this government edict. I'm saying they can't do it. Can't do it. Here's why. At least two reasons. You know, we don't want to be mean to transgenders. But if we're going to submit to a governmental edict here, what we are doing is at least two things. Number one, their agenda is to erase the God-created differences between male and female. And what we do when we submit to this edict, because of their rationale, we agree with them. And we are erasing the God-created differences between male and female. If it were a different context, for a different reason, like you say, we just got one room here, we got one bathroom, we're a small church, that's fine. But when you do it because the government tells you to, because of why they're telling you to, you got the wrong motive and you got to take a stand. The second reason is that if we submit to the government edict and accommodate the transgenders in this way, then we affirm the transgenders in their sin. We say, hey, we agree. Shouldn't matter. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see.
I don't know if you agree or disagree. I assume you agree.
Yeah, I do. I don't have a problem with the one stall thing because, having these big church facilities is... We can go into another conversation on that.
That's a whole different issue. That's right, church buildings and how much money we spend. You know. And I just said, practically speaking, I don't have a problem either. But I'm talking about if you submit to the government edict. The government, you already got this, and you're going to change it because the government edict. You got a problem with King Jesus.
I agree with that.
All right, so let's be men. And I mean that metaphorically, be men and women be women, but women be strong like men in Christ.
But I don't have trouble with, closing it to members only. You know, they used to give a sign out front.
You can't have it. What do you mean?
Well,
members only?
No, you're gathering to worship and we're scattered to evangelize.
Well, that's
true. And so, getting back to a...
Well, now we got to do a whole other broadcast.
I know. Of that kind of thing.
Because now you got to deal with 1 Corinthians 14, where Paul says if the uninformed comes in.
Right.
Now, is that a mandate, or is it just, well, if so, we'll do it. We'll have a whole other broadcast.
All right. Would you,
yeah. Now, that's the fun part about live, well, it's not live, but
recording.
Unscripted conversational podcasting or radio broadcast. But here's the bottom line for now. We're going to come back to that subject next time. Where I'm coming from, you got to take a stand because now the gospel is on the line. You got to hold the line for God's glory, for the truth. And here's the good news. It's the gospel that transforms people. You let those transgender folk come into your church building. You're friendly. You're loving. But you don't compromise. You speak the truth in love. You preach the gospel. And guess what? The Bible says, I am not ashamed of the gospel because it's the power of God. It's the power of God unto salvation for those who believe, right? First of the Jew and also the Greek. That includes all the transgender folk.
Right.
So it's the gospel that overcomes. You agree with that, don't you?
I do.
Say it louder.
Yes.
All right. I guess we got our topic for next show lined up. Join us then.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archived broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. The Dean's List. The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.